So I've just made my way to my little office at the end of my garden. It's just gone 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm waiting for a call from a hacker called Commander X. Don't really know that much about him. I've had weeks of contact through encrypted emails. He's told me the only time he can get in touch is the middle of the night. So I've just got to sit here and wait. Welcome to the weird world of hacking.
Hacker, someone who finds a weakness in a computer or computer network and breaks into it.
We do not forgive. We do not forget. Accept us.
You sound a little bit muffled. Is there a way of moving your mic at all? Just so...
It's possibly the fact I'm wearing the mask.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. There's this guy, Q, who'd been in touch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He has like a million names. He's one of the most mysterious of them all.
Hello?
Hey. Were you surprised the first time you did it, how easy it was to get into these systems?
Yeah, incredibly. At first, I didn't believe it. I thought it was someone making fun of me or something. But afterwards, it was like, holy cow, this actually can be done.
I'm Simon Cox, and this is the documentary The Hackers on BBC World Service. Computer hackers are highly prized assets, employed by governments, companies, police and security services to protect their systems and spy on their enemies and rivals. But a new breed of hacker has been emerging. Hacktivists don't want to protect, but to disrupt, damage and even destroy, not for money, but to make a political point.
It could be one of the biggest hacks of all time. Now an investigation gets underway into how the personal
Today we are releasing 1.7 gigabytes of data that used to belong to the United States Bureau of Justice.
Yeah, hello, sure, yeah?
Hey, it's Bruce.
Bruce, how you doing?
The confidential call between the FBI and Scotland Yard about hacking, that was hacked.
The most notorious hacktivist group is Anonymous. Its targets have included government websites, the CIA, and companies like Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal.
Well, you've heard of the hacker group that calls itself Anonymous. They're hacking activists, Wall Street occupiers, they love them. Corporate security hates them, and the FBI is tracking them down. So who are these people?
If you haven't heard of them, you may well have seen them, or at least their supporters. Even during interviews, they like to wear distinctive Guy Fawkes masks to protect their identity and retain their cherished anonymity.
You can never, never have complete certainty as to what is going on, who's involved, and whether something is true or false. But I would say that is a central, central part of their kind of political power, is not being able to fully understand who is behind the mask.
That's what I wanted to find out. Who is behind the mask and what motivates them to put it on in the first place?
We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us.
If there's one person who knows Anonymous better than anyone else, it's Professor Gabriella Coleman of McGill University in Canada. She's been researching Anonymous for years and is currently writing a book about the group.
The mystery and amorphousness of Anonymous in particular has been a little bit exaggerated. It is a little bit more diverse than you may think. There's people with technical skills, from hacking to sort of video editing, to people with no such skills but are committed to things like fighting censorship. And then in terms of backgrounds, you have everything from teenagers to grandfathers to PhD students to information technology workers to artists and designers. It is pretty diverse, but we can never get a total picture. We just get glimpses.
I've been following different parties behind online attacks for 20 years.
Mikko Huppanen is chief research officer for F-Secure, a Helsinki-based computer security company that produces antivirus software and regularly has to fend off attacks.
And I have to tell you, I was really surprised when hacktivists and movements like Anonymous came around. I really didn't expect them to become such a big deal. Now they are one of the largest sources of attacks that we actually see.
But you've come across some of them. What kind of people are involved with Anonymous?
Not nearly all of them are computer experts. Some of them are just have very strong opinions or are politically active and want to be part of a movement, and they feel at home inside a movement like this. Some of the others are very good with computers, are programmers, and use their skills. But more of them are geeks in one way or another. If they aren't computer geeks, they're geeks anyway.
Geeks or not, people using the Anonymous badge can be found across the globe.
Hello, citizens of the world. We are Anonymous.
Good morning, Mabuhay, Philippines.
Greetings, Government of Greece.
Olá, povo brasileiro. Permita.
Anonymous from Veracruz, Mexico.
We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us.
One of the best ways to make contact with members of Anonymous is through Twitter. And looking at the screen here, there's an awful lot of accounts, and I've been directed to a couple of people who may talk to me. One of them is a guy called Commander X, who is the head of the PLF, which is a transnational global cyber insurgency, according to their Twitter account. So I've sent the commander a message, and I'm going to see if he'll chat to me.
DDoS, distributed denial of service attack, flooding a website or computer server with requests so that it can no longer cope and crashes.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not bad, yourself?
Good, good to hear from you.
Yeah, likewise.
I did get some replies, which led to countless exchanges of messages to encrypted email accounts. And I finally found someone who would speak to me in person, well, online at least, but using Instant Messenger, so I could at least see him. He goes by the name Dr. Steelhammer.
I first got involved June, July time this year, but I'd been an avid follower of Anonymous since, you know, its first appearance as an activist organisation in 2008.
And what's the campaign you've been involved in then since you've become active in the summer?
The main one I've been involved in was Operation Alliance, which involved various groups and countries of Anonymous. It was basically to have a go at the Catholic Church for condemning gay marriage in Scotland.
And what did you actually do then within this operation?
Members of Anonymous DDoSed one of the sites, which I believe was the Bishops' Conference for England and Wales, and they took down the site for roughly 30 to 40 minutes.
Is that having much of an effect, though, if you're bringing down a website for half an hour, less than an hour? What's that actually achieving?
Well, the thing it can achieve, especially shown when Anonymous DDoS the sites of MasterCard, Visa, for their blockade on PayPal donations to WikiLeaks, they've proved that the internet is not some playground that corporations and governments just take basic civil liberties and destroy them and get away with. And that showed that around 10,000 angry people could make them lose potentially a lot of profit by taking down their websites for even half an hour.
Can it end up, because of the nature of the organisation, attracting lots of fantasists who say, I'm a really big hacker, or I'm a big criminal, but in fact, they're not at all?
Yeah, there does seem to be a lot of that within Anonymous. You know, it's like smoking in high school. A lot of people start it because it's cool. So a lot of, I think maybe possibly young kids, see the image of Anonymous and they see the romance behind it and they just think, oh, I want to be that person. But yet when they get involved, they don't share the ideals of, you know, a lot of the Anonymous members who've been there since the beginning.
What are those ideals?
Freedom of speech, the right to not be oppressed by governments or any organisation for that matter. And it's basically just people, humanity, me, you, my next door neighbour, your next door neighbour, just coming together and saying we want to fight the powers that be when they overstep the lines.
I had contact through various messages with a female hacktivist who specialises in targeting paedophile websites, trying to expose those
visiting them, and she goes by the name of Truth is Sexy. Now, I sent her a list of questions, which she's responded to through encrypted email, but I think instead of reading out all of her answers, I'll get someone to voice them up.
How do we know you are who you say you are?
Well, you don't. Who we are as individuals is irrelevant. I mean, what matters is the actions, goals and the work done by all.
And how did you get involved in targeting paedophiles?
I grew up surrounded by them, so part of my life is to challenge paedophilia. You can't just randomly attack a paedophile site without garnering as much information as possible about that site.
But how can you be sure you've got the right person?
Great care needs to be taken to verify information collected is accurate. Paedophiles play games and will adopt false identities. For me, if there's a lot of doubt, information won't be released. Arrests being made, that's the desired result.
And what would you say to critics who say it's just vigilantism?
I'd say wake up. I mean, law enforcement neither prioritises child abuse or budgets well enough to tackle the tidal wave of online paedophilia. I mean, if their child was next, they might think differently. I mean, don't cry to Anonymous when you've had enough. I mean, you were warned. We're doing this for you.
So over the past couple of weeks, I've been sending tweets to people. They don't want to talk on the phone. They're even nervous about communicating through email. They often do it through particular addresses that can't be traced easily. And I've just actually got an email in from Commander X, who I got in touch with. He said, "You need to understand, I live on the run. Every day is a unique challenge to stay alive and be free. Skype interviews require a unique setup, as he wants to do it in a public hotspot again, so he can't be traced." And he says, "I don't have much notice. I'll notify you the next time I'm free to do one." So I'll just have to wait and see whether he gets in touch in a day or a week, if at all.
The more sophisticated and controversial hackers don't just crash websites, they get into systems and take data out. In 2010, when Hacktivist did this, they claimed one of their biggest scalps was Rob Rackwald, Director of Security Strategy at the California-based IT company Imperva, explains.
Sony was the first time where Hacktivist breached a lot of data. In this case, it was 100 million records, 100 million credit card numbers, 12 million of which were unencrypted. What that showed hacktivists worldwide, that is, if you want to hurt a company, take the data, expose that data, because it cost them in terms of their stock price dropping the day they announce it. It cost them in terms of legal fees. It cost them in terms of notification fees that they have to tell people. They had to redo their infrastructure and so forth and so on. It became an extraordinarily expensive thing. And the fact that it was so painful for Sony is not a lesson that was lost on hacktivists worldwide. And since then, we've seen a very consistent pattern of, let's take the data if we can. If that doesn't work, then we'll DDoS them.
Like many of the hacktivist actions, the one on Sony was reactive, prompted by the Japanese company's decision to sue a computer programmer who'd modified his Sony PlayStation and published the details online. A group of hackers had broken away from Anonymous and formed something else known as Lulzsec. In 2010, Lulzsec took its revenge. This man is one of the group. We can't identify him for legal reasons, and appropriately enough, we're anonymising him, using an actor to speak his words.
Sony was a bad person because they tried ruining a guy's life just for flashing his own PS3. It's like modding your car with new wheels and then being sued for millions for it. It's just wrong, and someone needs to stick up for the little guy. And look what happened to Sony. They've lost more money than if they'd have just left the guy alone.
Lulzsec went on a 50-day hacking rampage, targeting companies like Visa, as well as the United Kingdom's Serious Organised Crime Agency.
Doxing. Acquiring and releasing someone's personal information online, such as home address and credit card details.
Lulzsec also targeted the Arizona Public Safety Department. They doxed them, putting the personal details of half a dozen police officers online, and it had immediate repercussions. Captain Steve Harrison.
At least one of the officers' wives received a threatening phone call, said that a explosive device had been placed outside their house and that they were going to blow up the house and the family. We dispatched our emergency disposal units up there evacuated the family, checked the property. There was no actual device found. Number of other officers received some harassing phone calls.
And I believe you became a target as well.
Yes, after the first intrusion, there was a lot of national and international attention to this. And I made a comment calling Anonymous cyber terrorist, and apparently they did not appreciate that comment. And then they specifically went out and targeted my personal email accounts and information. And from that, they gained all of my personal information. And they had Social Security, home phone number, home address, cell phone numbers. I mean, they had date of birth, they had everything.
And do you really think they're cyber terrorists? You don't think it's just civil disobedience, which is what a lot of people do think?
I do believe they are cyber terrorists. And I think there are perhaps some people that are civil disobedient. Some would probably be considered hacktivists. It's when they intrude into a system, they take people's personal information, where they disrupt service. To me, that goes beyond hacktivism.
The catalyst for these attacks was proposed new immigration controls in Arizona. By 2011, the authorities had had enough. The FBI and the Metropolitan Police hit back, arresting over a dozen hackers in the UK and the US. What was surprising about LulzSec was how young its members were. Most of those arrested were in their teens or early 20s.
Hello?
Hey, how's it going? It's Simon.
I'm good, thank you.
Good, we finally get to speak. Bizarrely, I managed to contact another young hacker called Siggy in Iceland, who I spoke to via Skype.
Basically, my hacking history isn't quite long, but when I was 12 years old, my father got blamed for hacking the Icelandic State Department. I didn't think that a 12-year-old could do that, but I could, so...
And what was it like that first time you managed to get into the government server?
Well, at first I didn't believe it. I thought it was someone making fun of me or something, but afterwards it was like, holy cow, this actually can be done. And when you've done it for the first time, you're actually, well, what more can I do? Or okay, this is great power. Should I do something very bad with it or just do something with the responsibility with it?
How did you progress from there? What was your next thing that you thought you should try?
Something foreign.
Can you give me an idea?
That was a defense ministry of a certain country. I was able to get into the CCTV cameras of the military bases in that country.
And were you not worried about what might happen to you?
At that age, you just felt invincible. Nothing could happen to you.
Siggy gave up hacking before he was caught. He now works with companies in Iceland. He came to prominence as a teenager when he leaked information about Icelandic banks. It's made him many enemies. He's had numerous threats and his cars have been repeatedly vandalised. But he's not someone to be crossed.
One time, an individual destroyed a car of mine, and I knew who it was. So the day after, someone accidentally issued a death certificate for him, so he couldn't use his social security number anywhere.
So you can do that kind of thing? You could create a death certificate for someone?
Yeah.
What other kind of things could you do?
If complete necessary, someone accidentally might become bankruptcy as well.
So you could make someone look as if they were bankrupt?
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to cross you then. Siggy is only 20, but when he was 18, he became the chief of staff at WikiLeaks, where he was known as Q. WikiLeaks has been one of the rallying calls for anonymous attacks, even more so since the founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, has faced extradition to Sweden.
Every time something happens in the Julian Assange case, for example, we see an increasing number of attacks against Swedish targets.
Anders Alkvist is a cybersecurity expert for the Swedish police, and in recent months he's been extremely busy, as banks, police and government websites have been attacked by people using the banner of Anonymous. What's your view of hacktivists? Is it just civil disruption, legitimate protest, or are they criminals, do you think?
Well, if you look in the law, in the legislation, they are criminals. But in the same time, we have to get used to new ways of people expressing what they feel and their opinion. And I can have some degree, I have an understanding for that, that you use, instead of walking the street shouting, you can use the internet instead. And we just have to get used to that, I think.
In America, some police we've spoken to have described them as cyber terrorists.
I know that, and I know that some people like to describe them as that, but I, as long as you are trying to shut down the Swedish police website or so, I think terrorism is a very strong word here.
The Swedish government isn't as sympathetic, though, and wants tougher punishments for hackers who stage large-scale attacks against computer systems. Around the world, politicians and police forces are trying to figure out the best way to deal with hacktivists.
What I would probably say to Scotland Yard, the FBI, is why are you bothering to even pursue us? Because there are too many of us.
We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us.
In this programme, I only scratched the surface. But one thing I found that everyone agreed upon is that the movement will get bigger.
It definitely seems to be changing. Today, anonymous is really an excuse, really, for anybody to hack anything for any reason. It's really hard to say what it is anymore other than this amorphous hack machine that gives people an excuse to be small A anonymous and then go after whoever you want.
Should we be worried about hackers?
Yes.
Why?
Well, basically, if you use your skills in the wrong way, then basically you can become a terrorist.
Whether it's a force for good or bad, the tactics are so diverse that I don't think you can come up with a blanket statement as to it's all good or it's all bad. But I think it's here to stay, and I think we're actually just at the beginning of it, and it's going to get more diverse and more interesting over time.
As for the ever-elusive Commander X, he's still on the run, and I haven't yet been able to speak to him directly. But I have had contact with dozens of others, and I wondered, when you're barely out of school and you've hacked into everything you can, what's left? So you've done all of this, and you're still only 20?
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
What are you going to do with the rest of your life?
That's also a bit of a problem.
The Hackers was presented by me, Simon Cox, and the producer was John Murphy.